Start with introductions, Mike?
Yeah, sure. Good morning. I'm Mike Niehaus. What am I this week? I am a Windows product manager for Windows deployment, and here with Jason this morning.
Yep, we're going to be talking about MDT. And I'm Jason Githens. I'm a senior program manager lead on the configuration manager team. You might be wondering, why is the configuration manager guy doing the MDT session? Well, the MDT, actually, MDT came over to our team fairly recently, so we own OSD and MDT. I'd actually managed, in all my years of IT, starting with SMS 1.2, I'd managed to avoid OSD altogether for several years. And suddenly I end up with MDT and OSD both. So, but I knew I'd made it. I knew that I was in the club when I was talking to my test lead, and I put this sentence together. I said, we're going to review the MDT bugs across ZTI, LTI, UDI. Then we're going to talk to the ADK folks about WinPE and USMT. Also, we need to look at a PIXI, SMP, and a DP issue. So once I threw that many abbreviations into two sentences, I knew I was in the OSD club. Of course, she looks at me and says, I don't know what in the heck you just said. So anyway, here we are, MDT session. Thanks to Mike, though, he's demystified a lot of this for us. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to do the talking points. Mike's going to do all the heavy lifting on the demos. We're going to keep more focus on demos than slideware, and because that's more interesting anyway. So I'll do some intros to the areas across. We'll start with, we'll go through LTI, ZTI, and UDI, and then I'll hand it over to Mike in each section, and he'll cover the demos for each. So let's just jump into that. So what's new in MDT 2012 Update 1? Well, released in August, updated in September. Primary goals of this release were to add support for Windows 8, Server 2012, and System Center 2012 Configuration Manager Service Pack 1. That just rolls right off the tongue to say it that way. So the main bullet here is there's something here for everybody. It's, as in previous versions, a simple upgrade process to get to this release. It's still free, still downloadable from the Microsoft location that's at the end of this deck. And again, the major themes I really already talked about. System Center 2012 integration, deploying to Windows 8, Server 2012, integrating the new tools and product capabilities into the MDT tool, and of course, everyone loves making the deployments easier and prettier. Prettier is very important because pretty sells, and it's good to sell a free product. So we're selling lots of MDT these days. So let's run through the, we're going to go through the light touch installation, LTI. New features here. There are Windows 8 and ADK support. Installing the new roles and features in Windows 8 and Server 2012. Additionally, and Michael showed this, I believe, as well, there's the ability to pick roles and features is really simplified and streamlined in this release. There's drop-downs per OS or per platform that make that process easier. You can also, as well as adding features, you can remove roles and features. There are new Windows PE components or feature packs. .NET 4, PowerShell 3, those kind of things in WinPE, and as well as BitLocker pre-provisioning, which really simplifies and speeds up the whole BitLocker process because it can apply BitLocker before it lays down the OS. It can apply it to the volume and speeds up the BitLocker process significantly with WinPE 4.0. Also, some new integrations. One of my favorites on here is the first one, the DART integration, Diagnostics and Recovery Toolkit. One of the cool things there is that allows you, combined with the monitoring feature that's also in this release, allows you to do a remote session into WinPE, which is pretty handy when you're troubleshooting and you get a system that's in a hung state that you need to take a look at. So Michael showed that. That's a pretty cool addition to this release. It's also the integration of Security and Compliance Manager, SCM. Those are the config packs that are really optimized for the various SKUs of Windows and various features or various products that related to Windows that allow you to be secure by default. You can apply these through local GPO, apply these compliance packs as part of the OSD process, and you start with a recommended state of a hardened state. There's WinRE, and then System Center Orchestrator, which is also a key integration in this release to allow you to run runbooks from the task sequence, which is pretty cool. There's also PowerShell support for 2.0 and 3.0 in the task sequence, and support for UEFI and offline state capture. Additionally, this is part of that pretty thing I mentioned earlier. There are improved system center style, that's hard to say, client wizards. There's that new monitoring capability I talked about, which is a great way to track your progress through all of the various tasks and processes involved in an OS deployment. And then there's just a load of behind-the-scenes improvements from partitioning, USMT, progress displays, cross-platform support, simpler VM template creation, and so on. So with that, I will turn it over to the cool stuff and let Mike take the demo.
Okay, so let's try to walk through some of these and get a feel for what some of these look like. So this is the new wizard style that we've been talking about, the system center style, which we'll get into in a little bit. One of the things that we want to look at while we're on this initial screen is the integration with Dart. Now, there are actually two versions of Dart out there. There's Dart 7, Dart 8. MDT 2012 Update 1 can integrate with both of them, but only really one at a time. Dart 8 is specific to Windows 8 and 80K version of Windows PE, so Windows PE 4.0, whereas Dart 7 is tied to Windows AIK, Windows PE 3.0, and Windows 7. So depending on which operating system you're deploying, you may choose Dart 7 or Dart 8. You may choose 80K or Windows AIK. Doesn't really matter to MDT. We'll use whatever's there. In this case, I'm deploying Windows 8. I have Dart 8 integrated. So if I click to run the Dart tools, we can see all the various Dart tools that are present here. Now, some of the people have commented that, okay, why are some of these disabled? And it just depends on the path that you use to get to these tools. In this case, I launched the Dart menu directly, so I haven't selected an operating system for Dart to operate against. So it's disabled the items that are related to operating system recovery. But I can still click on things like Explorer. I can bring up disk tools, file restoration tools, crash analyzer, things that don't require an active selected offline operating system. If I wanted to get to those operating system tools, I would have to go through the Windows recovery wizard, select a supported OS, which in this case would need to be Windows 8, and then those additional features would be active. In this case, I'm just going to go ahead and run the deployment wizard. And if you notice down here, there's this minimized window. This minimized window is the Dart remote control agent. So with this running, with MDT starting this in the background, now from the server, I can make a connection into Windows PE and remote control this machine, which is nice because normally you can't do any type of remote connection until the full operating system is up and running. With this, you can. Maybe there's an issue, there's someone at the machine who's starting the deployment, they're seeing a problem, they call you, they want some assistance, you can connect into the machine and troubleshoot without having to walk over to that machine. So we'll let that run in the background while we choose a task sequence here. So I'll choose Windows 8 Enterprise x64. I can specify domain, computer name, details. We do have an option to migrate user data. So in this case, we are able to see that there is an existing operating system on the computer. Even though I booted this via Pixie directly into Windows PE, we're able to detect that there's an OS there. And if we choose to move the user data in settings, we would run USMT offline to capture the user data from that offline OS, save it off to the side, install the new operating system, and then restore that user data back. So that's nice in cases where you just want to provide one set of instructions to your technicians that are doing the deployments. You just tell them always hit F12 to Pixie boot the machines, whether you're doing a new computer with no OS on it, or if you're migrating an an existing computer, say from Windows XP to Windows 7 or Windows 8. In this case, I'll choose Do Not Move just to speed this up a little bit. Now, because I said don't move the data that's local on the machine, we still get an option to restore from another computer. So if we're doing a computer replacement, we would run a replacement task sequence on the old computer to capture the user state to a network share, and then in this case, specify the location of that network share to restore that user data back to this machine. We can specify all our standard locale time zone details. Now, we had mentioned before that there's the new install roles and features capability, and we also added a wizard page related to that. So just the fact that this task sequence has an install roles and features step in it causes this wizard page to show up, where we can dynamically select the roles and features that we want to install. Things like maybe we want to install .NET 3.5, which isn't present in Windows 8 by default. Maybe we want to install Hyper-V, which is a new feature in Windows 8. Whatever feature we want to install, we can do that.
What happens if you do select all there, Mike?
It will take a very long time, but it'll do its best to install every single one of those features. And you probably wonder, well, why in the heck would you ever want to do that? And the answer is you don't. Don't install all the roles and features. It's kind of silly. But our testers got tired of going through this one by one and checking them all off, so the testers actually put in a DCR request saying we need a select all button because it's much easier to test all of these to make sure they work if we can select them.
Do they also take the calls when people do this in production and call in?
Unfortunately not. So it's not something that you would typically want to do, but it is there just in case you really want to try it and find out. Now, behind the scenes, if you've ever tried to install .NET 3.5 on Windows 8, you've probably seen that it's a little challenging to do, especially if you don't have an internet connection, because Windows 8 doesn't contain .NET 3.5 components. So normally, when you say to add .NET 3.5, it goes out to the internet and downloads them from Windows Update, but if you don't have internet access, you have to get it from the original Windows 8 media. So the MDT scripts are aware of that, and they'll automatically specify the path to the full media as long as you import the full source files into there to make sure that the DISM commands that add these features are able to add .NET into the operating system. In this case, I'll just choose Hyper-V. I can select one or more applications. Now, since we're talking about Windows 8, these could be your standard traditional desktop applications. They could also be Windows Store apps, Windows 8 apps, WinRT apps, the M-word apps, all the different terms that we've come up with to describe these Windows 8 new UI style applications. We can provision those into the operating system. I've got a session, I think, this afternoon talking much more about the Windows Store apps and how those behave, but basically provisioning makes an app available on the machine so it's automatically there for every user that logs on. So that's useful as part of the provision, as part of the deployment process, as well as part of the image creation process to let you preload apps onto the operating system. We can still choose whether or not we want to capture an image. If we were doing a normal deployment, we would just leave this at the default, say do not capture. If we wanted an image, we would run sysprep and then write a WIM file out to the location we specified. Our network is paused at the moment. Let's see if it recovers here. And then the next step would be to enable BitLocker. What we had talked about before with BitLocker is that we can now enable BitLocker offline. So as we go through and format and partition the disk, we can then turn on BitLocker, telling it to only encrypt the used space. The used space at that point is basically nothing. There is no used space on the drive, so the BitLocker encryption happens immediately. As soon as that encryption finishes immediately, then we can apply the operating system to the disk. Now that basically encrypts the OS on the fly as it's being written to the disk. So instead of having the 1 to 2 hour delay at the end of the process as BitLocker encrypts the data that's on the drive at that point, we can do it as the operating system is being installed. Apparently I lost my network connection altogether here. Let's see if we can reconnect. The joys of internet-connected demos.
So, Mike, how's that encryption process work? The key, how's the key handled in that process?
Yeah, while we can turn on encryption in Windows PE, we can't actually protect the operating system with the protectors that you would use normally with BitLocker until the operating system is up and running.
I see.
So it's basically a two-part process where we can encrypt the data, but with a clear key, so it's fully accessible through the whole process, and then at the end, be able to apply the protectors for a TPM or a PIN or whatever other protectors we wanted to add can be added at the end of the process. There are also some enhancements in Windows 8 related to BitLocker so that you can do a network unlock protector. So you could say, I want to automatically unlock this machine anytime it's on a corporate network. But if it's on an untrusted network, then prompt for a PIN. So you get some additional flexibility on BitLocker with those capabilities as well. As far as the question was, how much longer does the image take to apply since we're encrypting it on the fly? And really, it's not noticeable. It's the same basic impact as turning BitLocker on for an existing OS. People will ask, well, how much of an impact does the execution of BitLocker have on the operating system performance? And it really is only negligible, like single digit percentage increase in overhead on the OS to enable that during the task sequence. So you won't notice it too much. We'll see if it comes back here real quick. Otherwise, we'll switch back to slides.
Okay.
And pick up the demo where I left off. But it's getting close to reconnecting. We'll see if it can come back here. So the question was, is the BitLocker feature specific for MDT, or can we do this with Config Manager as well? It's actually supported by both. The enable BitLocker step, both in MDT and in Config Manager 2012 SP1, supports offline enablement of BitLocker. It does require machines that have TPM in them. That's one of the prerequisites for this. But it's supported for both of those products, working with both Windows 8 and Windows 7. So you can do it with Windows 8, and Windows 8 fully understands it. Windows 7 has a little bit less understanding of what's going on behind the scenes, so the UI will get a little flaky if you don't put the protectors on at the end of the process. But it is fully supported both with Windows 8 and Windows 7. So you would need to be using the ADK in the case of MDT Light Touch, because that offline BitLocker enablement is actually a Windows PE 4.0 feature. So as long as you use Windows PE 4.0, it works with Light Touch, and that's a prerequisite for Config Manager 2012 SP1. So you would get that there as well. So we finally recovered. We can get back to the screen here. Click on Next. We could enable BitLocker if we wanted to. In this case, this is in a virtual machine, so I'll skip over that. And then we're ready to start the deployment process. So if I go ahead and click Begin, we'll install the operating system. Eventually, it'll get to the point where it's applying the OS. And before, we used to run setup. We'd run setup.exe with an answer file, and we would apply the operating system using setup. But with MDT 2012 Update 1, we switched that so it now always uses ImageX to apply the WIM file directly. It's a little faster that way and really gives us a little bit more flexibility to do cross-platform deployments. So we've just made that the default for this version. So now let's switch over to the server side, where we should be able to see the monitoring. Let's hope we can see the monitoring. So we can see that the deployment is running. I can tell that it's this one because it's only been running for 46 seconds. If I double click on that, We can see the progress. It's currently on step 44 out of 90. It's on the install operating system step. That's the one that takes the longest amount of time. If we click the Dart remote control button, we can launch the Dart viewer to make a connection into that Windows PE session. If you've used Dart before, you can probably remember the types of information that you would need to type in to make this connection. Basically, it's everything that you can see on this viewer app. You would need to type in the IP address, the port number, which is randomly assigned, and the ticket number, which is randomly generated. So in the case of the MDT monitoring, it can gather that information from Windows PE, send it off to MDT, so that when you click that button, we can launch the viewer with all of that information typed in for you. So it saves you the trouble of having someone read you that information over the phone to make that connection. But basically, it then works like a standard RDP connection. It's, even though I'm in an RDP session, in a virtual machine, in another Dart remote control session, so I'm three levels deep in RDP at this point, performance is still pretty good. It's fairly easy to interact with the machine here and do whatever I need to troubleshoot any problems that might be occurring. So that's fairly easy to do. The monitoring will continue to update the progress. It automatically refreshes the display so we can see how far along it is.
What's that percent complete mean, Mike?
Well, it's percent complete based on the number of steps. So okay. We don't really know how long the individual steps are going to take. So we're not trying to estimate execution time. We're really just saying that, okay, in this task sequence that has 90 steps, we're now on step number 44 out of 90, so as a result, we're at 48% complete. So it will jump as soon as that install operating system step completes. It'll go from probably 48% complete to 70% complete immediately as it jumps forward in the number of steps. So it's not intended to be an indication of how much longer it's going to take. It's really much more about just telling you where it's at in the overall.
Well, that's too bad, because usually our progress bars are pretty accurate in terms of time left.
We're real good at progress bars. Okay, so we've looked at that. Let's look at the task sequence real quick just to see the types of changes that we've made in the task sequence. So in this case, we have a step that we've added to enable BitLocker offline. We do have this one configured to continue on error because it will not be able to do this if the machine doesn't have a TPM. So that's why that step is actually showing up white with a check mark instead of green with a check mark. We have steps in here to add the Windows recovery environment. We talked about the integration that we added for that. We have steps in here to apply the GPO templates with the apply local GPO pack, so that's where we will take care of that. I had manually added in a step here to install roles and features and actually put a condition on here to say show this or run this step if the task sequence variable supports SLAT equals true. It's one of the requirements on Windows 8 to add Hyper-V. In order to add Hyper-V, the machine needs to support second-level address translations, which is a hardware feature provided by Intel and AMD in their 64-bit processors. So we've got this step configured to automatically install Hyper-V. And in order to do that, we need to make sure that the machine has SLAT. So MDT is able to detect the presence of SLAT. It sets a task sequence variable to indicate that. And we can then trigger this step based on the result. We also added a step to opt in to the Customer Experience Improvement Program and Windows Error Reporting for Windows. That's not enabled by default because you might not want to have that type of information sent off to Microsoft, but if you don't mind doing that, we would encourage you to enable this step so that these machines provide that information back to Microsoft so that we can follow up on problem trends that we see from any type of application faults or blue screens that are occurring with the operating system. Okay, then on the deployment share side, since we are integrated with the ADK, if we look at the Windows PE settings under features, we can see a much longer list than we had before with the Windows AIK. Now we get all of the optional feature packs that are present in the 80K version of Windows PE. And the most interesting of those are .NET Framework and Windows PowerShell. There are also some commandlets that go along with that. So we can add commandlets for secure boot. We can add commandlets for storage management. We can add commandlets for DISM. So right now, MDT really doesn't use PowerShell for anything beyond installing roles and features. But we enable it so that you can start to use it inside of your task sequences, even in Windows PE now, now that Windows PE 4.0 includes PowerShell support. We also have an item at the bottom here, which isn't really a Windows PE feature pack, but we kind of pretend that it is one just to show it here in the same UI, to add in Dart. So as long as we can detect that Dart is present on the machine, we can check the box, and then MDT will automatically add the necessary Dart components into the boot image so that it runs the Dart remote control agent, and you get the button to launch the Dart tools.
And Dart's part of MDOP, in case you're wondering.
Okay, we have, let's see what else. Yeah, so the question was, is that the only version of MDOP that we deploy slash integrate? In the case of MDT Light Touch, yes. In the case of Configuration Manager, there's also AppV integration. So that would be the other MDOP component that's integrated in. Since I believe my networking is out to lunch here. No, it's just my console is out to lunch here. Love it when things like that happen. We will launch it again. That never happens in the real world. So we'll bring up Workbench again and look at couple of additional things. One is that we have added a new task sequence template. So if we look here, I've actually got a task sequence here to deploy Windows 8 into a VHD. So instead of doing a normal deployment where we format and partition the disk and then write the operating system to that disk volume, we have a template where we can first format and partition the disk, then create an empty VHD file on that disk, mount the VHD file, and then deploy the OS into that VHD. Then set up the machine for boot from VHD so that the OS is actually running from the VHD. Now in update one, we also improved that so you can actually do a refresh to VHD. So you could start from, say, a Windows 7 operating system, run a task sequence, and then end up with Windows 7 running from the hard drive, Windows 8 running from a VHD, and be able to boot back and forth between them. We'll make sure that we keep the BCD entry straight between those two. We also added in support for some new operating systems, so we can see PosReady 7, Windows Thin PC, so basically supporting all of the available volume license versions of Windows. And one other thing is around Orchestrator. We haven't looked at Orchestrator yet, so we should probably glance at that one real quick. So just for simplicity, I have a two-step task sequence here. One step that just sets the task sequence variable with a message that I want to pass into Orchestrator, and then a second one to run a particular Orchestrator runbook. So I can add this step into any task sequence, and then point it at my Orchestrator server. So in this case, my Orchestrator server is Contoso Orch. When I click on the Browse button, we will be able to see all of the runbooks that I have on that server. Now, my server's not particularly interesting. It only has one runbook on it, and that one runbook only has one step, and all it ends up doing is logging an event on the server. So this isn't a very good example of what you can do creatively with Orchestrator integrated into a task sequence. But there are some other sessions during the week that will show how to use Orchestrator to do much more creative things in the task sequence. Now, in this case, my Orchestrator runbook takes a couple of parameters. Those parameters are a message and the computer name. And because of the similarities between orchestrator parameters and task sequence variables, we can automatically map the two. So we just have logic that says, if there's a task sequence variable that matches the name of the orchestrator variable, just automatically pass those values through, so we don't need to configure anything. We could explicitly configure a message here, too, if we wanted to. So maybe we wanted to just pass in hello to the for the message that goes to that runbook. But it's just as easy to say automatically provide that and then get the values out of the task sequence environment. Now, to run that, I can execute, well, I thought I could just find it in the list so I didn't need to type it, but all I need to run is lighttouch.vbs, which is the standard way of starting up a task sequence. I can choose that orchestrator task sequence from the list. I'm actually running it on the server because, well, I'm not deploying an operating system, so this shouldn't do any harm to my server. When I choose that OS, it will invoke the orchestrator runbook by calling the orchestrator web service and saying, please run that. And this orchestrator step is then configured to wait for the orchestrator job to finish. So we will start the runbook, pass the parameters to it. It will run on the orchestrator server and report its results back, where we can then continue the task sequence on with the next step. Now, the orchestrator runbook can also return values. So the orchestrator runbook might set a variety of return variables as well. We'll take those values and save them into task sequence variables so that you can use those values in subsequent steps in your task sequence. So easy enough to do. We ran the runbook. It finished successfully. If we looked on the orchestrator server, we'd see that it created an event log entry with the computer name and the word hello world. So we'll skip over that one for now just for the sake of time, but fairly easy to do that type of integration.
Putting you on the spot, what's an example of a real-world runbook scenario?
The types of runbooks that we've seen people do are like in some of the configuration manager scenarios. Maybe you want to deploy an operating system, and in order to do that, you drop a computer into a collection. You could have a runbook that executes at the end of the task sequence that removes the computer from the collection.
Okay.
So you can do that type of thing. We've also seen scenarios where they've had an existing computer, say running Windows 7, and they deploy it a new Windows 8 operating system to it, and they want to move the computer from one OU to another OU because they have group policies tied to their Windows 7 OUs, and they want different group policies for Windows 8. So it's a single-step orchestrator runbook that you could call. Just say, move this computer from this OU to that OU while it's in Windows PE even, so that when the new Windows 8 OS comes up, it's not contaminated by anything that might have been in that Windows 7 GPO. So lots of simple, creative options like that. When you get into more advanced scenarios, then it becomes a question of how creative can you be, because Orchestrator provides all kinds of integration packs to let you tie in service desk software, databases, web services, talking to Config Manager, talking to Active Directory. It's just a question of what you want it to do. And before, you could have done the same thing with MVT using web services, but doing web services requires a developer. Using Orchestrator doesn't. So any IT pro can figure out Orchestrator with a GUI designer to let you lay out the steps that need to be executed.
Cool.
Very easy to do. Last item then is on the PowerShell side. We can run a PowerShell script in the task sequence. Those PowerShell scripts can integrate with the task sequence environment to set and retrieve task sequence variables. So let me run another task sequence here just to show what that looks like, and then we'll look at that PowerShell script too. So I have another task sequence here. It has a single run PowerShell script step in it to run a test script. When I execute it, we can see it start up. It takes a couple of seconds to initialize. Now the PowerShell script is displaying progress, so we can see it count across the screen from 1 to 100. Basically, it just has a loop where it's going through and doing that. And then it finished. So we ran the PowerShell script. This is the PowerShell script that we executed. Didn't really do a whole lot. It wrote some output, hello world, which ended up in the normal bdd.log along with all the other output. We told it to dump out all the task sequence variables, which is a single line. We can just do a directory of the task sequence environment and get all the values that are present there. We can also look at list values, which are the numeric suffixed variables, so it treats those as arrays. This was the logic that we used to display the progress by counting from 1 to 100. So just fairly easy to go through and display that information. If we looked at it from a logging perspective, let's see, where is that? Deployment logs. We can see that it ran the PowerShell script. It ends up creating another log file for the PowerShell script itself, where we can see the output that it generated. This was one of the lines that was in the script. It did a directory of the environment, so it dumped out all the environment variables. And then right after that, it did a directory of the task sequence environment, and it dumped out all the task sequence variables that were defined. So these are all the values that MDT had collected that you can use within the task sequence, within your own scripts, as conditions on task sequence variables. Just really easy with a one-line PowerShell script to dump all of that information out. I think that's it. Let's switch back over.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. So next, we'll talk about what's with ZTI, what's new with ZTI, and the list probably looks really familiar. it's very similar to what we talked about with LTI. So, just to go through it quickly, there's a Windows 8 deployment, support for Config Manager 2012, SP1, of course, Windows 8 deployments, BitLocker pre-provisioning again, deployment to UEFI, then the same new integration. So. Clearly, I have the Robin role in this duo today, so I guess we'll turn it back over to you for the, there's one more page, sorry, but it's more of the same. It's the offline state capture, the monitoring capability. One thing that is different in this slide from the other is continued support for CMO7, Configuration Manager 2007, and then some behind-the-scenes improvements, the single task sequence for UDI, ZTI, and then the same other partitioning stuff we talked about earlier. So. That was my brief moment. Back to you.
So let's look at ZTI. So in this case, we're using Config Manager 2012. And I've pre-created some task sequences. But we'll take a quick peek at some of these just to see the types of changes that we've made. Now, if we look at, say, a UDI Windows 8 Enterprise x64 task sequence, and I always do that. I always double-click on it to try to edit it, and that always brings up the properties. So right click, edit. We can look at the types of changes that we've made. Now, one of the items that was mentioned on the slides was that we merged together the ZTI and the UDI task sequence templates. So one of the common questions that we then get from customers that don't read documentation to say that, oh, by the way, we did this, they say, well, what happened to UDI? Well, we integrated it into the ZTI template so that now when you create a new task sequence, you'll choose the client template, and it will ask you an additional question. Do you want the wizard or don't you want the wizard? And as a result of that, it ends up setting a single difference. It sets this step. So this step says skip wizard equals no, and skip wizard equals no means display the UDI wizard. If you don't want the UDI wizard, change skip wizard to yes, and now you won't get the UDI wizard. So it's easier for us to have one task sequence template where the wizard shows up or doesn't show up with the same functionality for both scenarios rather than before where we had some things that only worked with UDI, some things that only worked with ZTI. Now either can be doable. One of the items in the list, too, we had talked about UEFI support. And with Configuration Manager 2012 SP1 and MDT LightTouch, we added full support for UEFI, which is really important if you're deploying Windows 8 to new Windows 8 logo certified computers, especially tablets, because a lot of the new tablets are going to be UEFI only. So if you weren't able to deploy using UEFI, you wouldn't be able to deploy to these computers. In order to do a UEFI deployment, we need to format and partition the disk differently. So if you look at the task sequence, there are now multiple format and partition disk steps where we will need to format for UEFI systems with a four-partition structure, whereas for non-UEFI systems, we only need to create one or two, depending on which operating system that we're deploying. So these task sequences will include conditional formatting steps. We can detect whether the machine has booted in using the UEFI, and we'll run the appropriate step based on what we found. Now, if we get into the real formatting and partitioning, you'll see that we've made it a little bit even more complicated. Not really complicated, but we have four partitioning steps. So if we detect that the machine is booted using UEFI, we'll create the four-partition structure with a FAT32 boot partition, a recovery tools partition of 300 meg, which is actually required to enable BitLocker on Windows 8, MSR reserve partition, and then the rest of the disk for the operating system. If you're not using UEFI and you're deploying Windows 7 or later, we'll create two partitions with a 499 meg boot partition and 100% the remaining disk space used for the OS. That's actually a change in MDT 2012 Update 1, because in MDT 2012 RTM, we had 500 megabytes as the size. So we changed it from 500 to 499.
Really gave a lot back there.
Yes, we wanted to give back that 1 megabyte. It was actually because of a bug that was filed. Some customers noticed that if you created a 500 megabyte boot partition, you could no longer create VSS snapshots of your operating system. But if you changed it to 499, you can. There's a weird rule in VSS when you're creating volume snapshots for backups that says if the volume is 500 meg or larger, it needs to have more free disk space. If you create it at 499 or smaller, it doesn't need to have as much free disk space. So by moving from 500 to 499, now we can enable backups again.
And you can fit one more picture on your primary partition.
Just in case you ever want to store pictures on your NTFS boot volume. So that's why we've gone to 499. We needed to get backups to work. So we have conditions on these steps. In this case, it will look at the operating system version. It will be able to see that this is Windows 7 or above. We've got another step for Windows Vista, so looking at Windows version 6.0. In the case of Windows Vista, the only real difference is Windows Vista requires a 2 gig boot volume. So instead of that 499, we create 2 gigabytes. And then the last one is for Windows XP. If we detect that you're deploying Windows XP, which I hope none of you are doing, Windows XP doesn't need two partitions, so we just create one partition with 100% of the disk. We are down to the last year of Windows XP support, so hopefully you're well on your way to getting off of Windows XP and getting to Windows, at least Windows Vista, hopefully Windows 7, maybe Windows 8, just to get onto a supported operating system. And with that, I've lost my network connection again. Let's see if we can reconnect again, because it doesn't seem to be auto-connecting.
Correct. The question is, can you use, basically the question is, can you use ADK on CM07? And you can, and the answer is no. You have to use Wake.
Yeah, so taking it a little bit further, the basic question was, well, what do you lose with Config Manager 2007? And obviously support for ADK is a key part of it, which also causes you to not be able to support offline BitLocker with Config Manager 2007, but you also don't have support for UEFI, and I think those are the two main things.
Two big ones,
in the case of MDT, we actually used the same task sequence template There's one other thing, install apps.
Oh, yeah.
The new app model support. Yeah. So we have the same task sequence template that we use for both Config Manager 2007 and 2012. But when we import it into 2007, we first delete those steps. Delete the UEFI steps, delete the offline BitLocker steps, delete the install application step. And then you have a task sequence that works fine with Config Manager 2007. So the internet really went down this time. My machine's saying that there is no internet access at all. Let's see if we can use the public wireless.
So not just the keynote has these issues.
Well, it looks like we're down completely.
Wonderful. Should we cut back to the slides?
Well, let's see what else we can talk about. So we've already shown...
We've got a question here. We can take that.
Sure. So is the question, you're asking if there are any drawbacks with MDT Light Touch to using 80K? Only one that I'm aware of. I mean, you get benefits out of it. It's faster. It adds offline BitLocker support. It's much better at supporting UEFI. So the new version of Windows PE generally is a positive. The only negative would be for hardware that doesn't support Windows 8's CPU requirements. Windows 8 added a requirement that says the machine must support no execute, NX, SSE2, and PAE, which are processor features that must be present. Since Windows PE 4 is based on Windows 8, that means Windows PE 4 must include that as well. So if you have some very low-end or older hardware, it might not be able to run Windows PE 4.0. That also applies to older versions of VMware. In case you're still running VMware 5.0, 5.0 doesn't include those processor support capabilities. So Windows PE 4 won't boot on VMware 5.0. You need to upgrade to at least VMware 5.1 in order to support Windows PE 4.0 and Windows 8 and Server 2012.
Another area we see that being hit is with embedded devices as well. On the same hardware problem exists,
yeah,
but that's really
tend to be lower end devices
exactly,
without those processor capabilities. But for most laptops and desktops that you would buy today with Intel Core processors, it's not going to be a problem. It's going to be more of the Celeron type devices, the devices that you typically wouldn't see in a traditional business environment. So we'd already talked about the Orchestrator and PowerShell capabilities that were present in MDT Light Touch. Those, of course, also carry through into Config Manager as well. We have the same integrations in the Config Manager task sequences so that we can add Orchestrator and run PowerShell script steps into those. We also have added the ability to do offline USMT into the ZTI task sequence. Because I mentioned that we had merged together ZTI and UDI. UDI always did offline USMT. ZTI always did online USMT. When we merged it, we actually now give you a choice. UDI will still always do offline, because that's just the way UDI has been designed. But for ZTI, you can actually set a task sequence variable to choose whether you want offline or online user state migration. Most people choose offline in order to make sure that there are no files in use, which is good when you're pushing out OSs to machines that were left on. The user could be logged in, they could have files open. By rebooting the computer and capturing the user state offline, then you can make sure those in-use files get captured. But you can, by default, it will actually still do an online USMT capture. Because we didn't want to change the default behavior for ZTI. But if you look in the documentation, it'll talk about a USMT offline capture variable. If you set that to true, then it will make sure that it runs USMT offline. I'm not sure our network's going to recover here. It looks like we've lost the internet completely. Maybe it's back and Windows 8 just didn't notice yet. We'll try to connect again. As far as the monitoring and Dart integration goes with Config Manager, in the case of the Light Touch, when we looked at that one, we saw the screen where you could press the button to launch the Dart Tools menu. Now, in the case of Config Manager, there's not an easy way to do that because we don't have a UI inside of a ZTI task sequence to launch those tools. So the main benefit of integrating Dart into a ZTI deployment is to get that remote control agent. So we have the logic included to automatically start the remote control agent for both ZTI and UDI task sequences. And by tying that into the monitoring capability that we looked at before, we can get that same single button push to connect using the Dart agent even to a ZTI running task sequence. So that's the main reason that we tied in the monitoring for ZTI. Now,
you're
we don't
cut over to the MDT console, the monitoring.
Yeah, and
node.
That's the downside. Yeah. You do need to switch back over to the MDT console in order to view the status of your running Config Manager task sequences. It's not integrated into Config Manager. It's just integrated into the MDT workbench. The other downside of the monitoring when we're talking about ZTI is that it only sees the status of the MDT steps. It doesn't see the status of the built-in Config Manager steps because they don't know how to talk to the MDT monitoring service to report what they're up to. So when it gets to like the install operating system step, which is the long running one, that one you won't be able to see in monitoring. You'll actually see the step right before it, which I forget which one that exactly is, but it's like ZTI configure or something like that. So it'll show you that one because it doesn't know that the task sequence went on to the next step. But we get lightweight monitoring. We get the ability to integrate in the Dart agent, even though we don't get a 100% monitoring solution because we're not also watching the task sequence variables that are the task sequence status messages that are being sent by the Config Manager steps. So let's go back to the slides while we see if the network will cooperate with us here.
So the last section we're going to talk about here are the new changes, or the changes in UDI. You support the first bullet there, support for Config Manager 2012 SP1. Sound like we're saying that a lot. Windows 8 support, the Windows 8 application installation. The second bullet's really where the really interesting stuff in UDI comes in, and a really cool addition is the build your own pages. That's got a nice UI, which hopefully we'll get to see. I don't have any screenshots of it, but you can look at it with your MDT download. But it's got a nice page and workflow creation UI, which really helps you customize the whole UDI experience. It's got localization capability directly integrated as well, and SDK documentation. So if there's anything you want to build custom to UDI, there's documentation for the SDK now. And it's all, again, the same shared task sequence, deal as well. So you have a local.
I don't have access to my remote server, but I've at least got MDT installed locally. So we can look at the UDI designer. Now, the UDI designer is basically a tool that's used to customize the UDI wizard. So to choose which wizard pane should be displayed, to change the order, to pre-populate the data that should be displayed. So we can do configuration from here, where we would want to open up a wizard definition, which is basically just an XML file that defines our wizard behavior. So let me see if I can find one of these. We have around here somewhere. Must be in the scripts folder. UDI wizard config.xml is the default configuration. Now we can see within that wizard configuration, we have different wizard setups. We have one for new computers, one for refresh, so if we're going to do a wipe and load deployment, and then a third one for replace. In the case of new computer, we run through 11 different wizard panes, and for each one of those, we can pre-populate them with certain information. Like in the case of the welcome page, we can change the text that's going to be displayed. In the case of BitLocker, maybe we want to change the default, where I had it turned on by default, maybe I wanted to turn it off by default. Or instead of choosing TPM and PIN by default, maybe I just want it to be TPM. So I can basically customize all the defaults on each of the wizard screens. So that's interesting enough. We've also added inside of the install applications, install programs page, we added support for Config Manager 2012's app model. So you can add packages and programs, which are the standard Config Manager 2007 mechanism. We can also add applications. In the case of applications, these would be new Config Manager 2012 apps. Those would then get installed as part of the task sequence. The last option, though, is for Windows 8 specifically, installing Windows apps, Windows Store apps. This one is a little bit more complicated because, as I'll talk about in this afternoon session, when you install Wizard's Windows Store apps on Windows 8, they install per user. Well, Config Manager Task Sequence doesn't run per user. Config Manager 2000, Windows 8, when the Config Manager Task Sequence executes, it would install the app as part of the system context, which you would never be able to run it that way. So if you choose a Windows Store app to add it into a UDI configuration, what ends up happening is it just records the fact that an install needs to run, and it defers the installation of that until a user logs on, until the primary user of the machine logs on. Then a script will kick in the background and will automatically install the specified applications for that primary user. So it's tied into user device affinity. It's tied into a script that runs at first login. It's not actually integrated into the task sequence. But we at least get the ability to select those as part of the task sequence to choose what app should be installed for that user on their first login. It looks like we have internet connectivity again. So we'll see if we can connect here. In the meantime, we can continue on with my local install.
Now you can preview those pages as well, right?
We can preview those. So once we've got it configured the way we want, it's easy enough to click on preview, and it'll show us the behavior that we've configured in the wizard. So in this case, now we can see that enable BitLocker is no longer checked. We could populate anything that we wanted as far as images and volumes. We can choose targets. We can specify pre-flight checks that should be executed. We could pre-populate domain details. So I don't have any in there right now. So the only thing that we can do is a work group. If we wanted to do that, we could go back over to the computer screen, which is probably easier to find in the flow, but I'll find it in the page library here, where we can go to domains and OUs. We can add a domain. And then I can specify one or more OUs. In the case of the computer's OU, if you want it in the default computer's container, it's not actually an OU, you can just leave the distinguished name blank. So I'll put that in there. Normally, if you added one manually, it would be something like CN equals, or OU equals Redmond, DC equals Contoso, DC equals COM. So that type of a format, you would specify the distinguished name for that OU. And then once we're happy with that, we can go back to preview. And if we scroll forward, we can now see that it's been populated with the domain that I've specified. We have the drop-down list for the OU. So tried to make it fairly easy to configure that information using the designer. Where it gets much more interesting is really in the build-your-own page scenario. So if you wanted to create your own custom pages with UDI, it wasn't possible with MDT 2010 Update 1. We added the ability to do it using C++ and an SDK in in MDT 2012 RTM. But then in Update 1, we also added in the Build Your Own page. So I can say that I want to add a new page, specifying Build Your Own page. I can call it whatever I want. And now I just get a blank workspace once I open it, where I can drag and drop properties onto the page. So basically, I designed this like I were designing a Visio. I can add radio buttons. I can add text boxes. I can add lines. I can add text. And for each of these, I can tie them to a task sequence variable. So in this case of this radio button, I could specify that the value that's selected here should be used to set task sequence variable name called radio. Or in the case of a text box, I can specify a task sequence variable, whatever I want. And when this wizard is actually executed, it will take all the values that were put in and set those task sequence variables so that you can use them then later in the task sequence. Now, my artistic skills with this are about as good as my artistic skills in Visio, so this isn't anything very fancy, but we can at least see if we go back to the flow, we can add this page. I'll put it right after the welcome screen, and then click on preview, and we can see the page that I had laid out.
That's beautiful.
Nothing fancy, but hey, we've got labels, we've got radio buttons, and it actually
works.
Put your
picture in there too.
We could put in images, we could do all kinds of fancy stuff, but yeah, you really don't want me trying to do art. So that's the build your own page support. And I figure at the rate we're going, we'll get an internet connection back right about the end of the session.
13 minutes.
Have they ever figured out what the problems are with the internet connection? Mm-hmm. Apparently not, because it still keeps going up and down. Any other questions while we're here? So the question was, can you filter the list of packages that are displayed to the user? And you can, but not through security groups. What you can do is you can actually display a different wizard configuration for different groups of users. So if you have a mechanism to ask for, say, a primary user, you could then use that information to choose which list of applications should get displayed. So you can do a little bit like that, but it's not going to be a granular filtered list. We have seen some people that have done more creative solutions where they would tie in either a web service or an orchestrator runbook that dynamically generated that list of applications, then updated the XML file with that list, and then displayed the wizard. So there are ways to do it. They're just not going to be as simple as going in and saying this user should see this application. There are some tricks that can be used. So the question was around server roles, that you can select them in the task sequence when you add the install roles and feature step, and then you can also select them in the Light Touch wizard, where in the Light Touch wizard, what you select in the wizard basically gets added to whatever was specified in the task sequence. So let's say you pre-configured the task sequence to install Hyper-V, and then the user chose to install the Telnet client. So now you would get both Hyper-V and the Telnet client installed. So that should work fine. If the user happened to choose Hyper-V again, it would probably try to install Hyper-V twice, which wouldn't cause any problems. But generally, you would want to do one or the other. You can add the install roles and feature step and pre-populate it with the items that you want, and then set a task sequence variable to say don't display the wizard pane. I think it's skip roles equals yes or something like that. Or you can do it the other way around, where you intend to only select the items from the wizard and you don't set them in the install roles and feature step. Well, so the question was the behaviors in the case of installing applications where there are reboots. If you look at the way UDI and ZTI, for that matter, work, they build a list of apps that are going to be installed by setting a variable list with the names of the apps that need to be installed. And then it becomes the responsibility of the install application step in the task sequence to install them in order that they've been specified. If maybe the second app requires a reboot, it should reboot and then install the third app. I don't recall if there were bugs with that.
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
There were some issues with that I know that were resolved in SP1, but I'm not sure about that specific one. From a UI perspective of being able to display them in alphabetical order? Well, you're talking about the UDI designer specifically? Yeah, that's a good feedback item.
Yeah.
Which is something at the end of our deck. Sign up for our Connect site and submit feedback.
Which that we're fast going to because we can't get to the demo box.
So. Can't get back to the machine, but I think we've looked at most of it anyway.
Okay. So just to wrap up and good segue to your feedback items, we have moved. Like I said, we've MDT is now being engineered in the Config Manager team. So doesn't change anything with MDT. It's just where the engineering effort's being done from. So the Connect feedback just goes through the same site that you use for Config Manager or client management generally. And there'll be an MDT tab there. So we're moving everything over from the dedicated MDT presence on Connect now. But that's where we should get the feedback items, like the alphabetized thing. That's a good one to send up through that channel. This is the best way for us to track all your feedback and make sure it gets in our database and make sure that it's always there for us to look at and review with every release. Coming soon, there will be MDT 2013. That's about all we can say about it at this point, but there will be another release after update one, so that's coming soon. Similar to the keynote, there'll be more on that in the tech ed timeframe, June.
It's the same basic story that we've told in the past, that if you submit the feedback, it ends up in our bug database, and one thing we can't do is ignore bugs.
Exactly.
So they have to have some action taken.
They are there forever.
The action might be, sorry, we can't fix it at this point in time, but we will at least look at them. So if you have any feedback at all, suggestions, improvements, bugs, anything like that, please go out to Connect and submit them. We also have, for those of you interested in kind of getting just general OS deployment related tips, if you're on Facebook, there is a Microsoft Deployment Toolkit page on Facebook. Well, we generally just post announcements about new tools that are available, new versions that are available, betas, important notices on things that are now available related to OS deployment. Generally, you won't see too much on that from us, maybe one item a week. We do also have forums out on TechNet. You can check those out as well. If you've never signed up for the MyIT Forum MDT OSD mailing list and you're doing OS deployment related activities, it's a great resource where there are, I'd say, probably in the range of 10 to 50 emails a day from people asking and talking about OS deployment with MDT, with Config Manager. How do I do this? How do I solve that? So lots of those types of technical discussions where we are actively participating in that as well, and trying to help solve the types of OS deployment challenges that you're typically running into.
And evals, please complete those and tell how great the demos were. And the internet connectivity was stellar. Put that in there. And that's really all we have. We'll take questions. We have a few minutes left. We finished a little early thanks to connectivity issues, but we're here for
bad.
Questions.
We've got three more minutes before we're officially at time. So if you have any other questions and you're not in the first five or six rows, please come up to the mics because we can't see that far. It's kind of blinding up here. question.
Yeah, we have we've run the MDT integration into SCCM 2012, running SCCM 2012, Service Pack 1, and we've got MDT 2012 Update 1. And we've noticed that when we create an MDT task sequence for OSD, that we cannot migrate it using the SCCM migration feature from one 2012 SP1 environment to another 2012 SP1 environment. Both have the MDT 2012 Update 1 installed. But because that has those, some MDT task sequence steps, migration fails. Any comment on that and any potential for that to be fixed in the future? That's kind of a,
it's
frustrating.
I hear you. That would be, a good example of the feedback items to get that on Connect and get that in our queue. But that's a good point.
That was one of them that we actually heard about last night at the expo as well. It wasn't something that we were aware of beforehand, so it's something we'll have to try to see what's going on with that. I took a note, so if you don't submit the feedback item yourself, I will after trying it out myself. The challenge with me is I need two config manager environments to try to migrate it between, but we'll try it out and make sure that we can.
And when you submit the item, then you get full visibility into the status of that item. That's the benefit of submitting it, because you can track progress. You can get, it's a channel for you, two-way communication between you and us reviewing the bug, and that's a great way to keep track of it.
Sure. Yeah, I actually opened up a premier case on that. Is there any, does that flow down to you guys?
It would flow up to us eventually,
Eventually.
You have faster channels to go through Connect and get it on our radar faster.
Okay, but, great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know if there are any plans to integrate MDT with Windows Intune for applications, maybe, or the agent?
No plans yet, no.
Thank you.
Sorry.
We've seen plenty of people who have used an MDT light touch task sequence to install the Intune agent. That part's not particularly hard, but getting that next level of integration, there's no great extensibility options yet to have like MDT talk to Intune and tell it to do something. So over time, hopefully that will come.
Yeah. Anything else? Or you guys welcome to come up to the stage too if you prefer that. We have a couple minutes left.